question or comment? Need savvy travel advice? Connect with Robert, Mary, and Rudy anytime on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter at RM World Travel. Now, back to RM World Travel.
All right, as we get back to more of our Travel Talk get-together and our J-Block in this second hour of RM World Travel, today it's time to travel the world from your own kitchen, everyone. But before we do that, Mary and I want to alert you that we're sponsored by Travel Pro Luggage.
All right, well, many of us are certainly dreaming, and maybe we're even beginning to plan where we hope to be traveling at some point, whether it's maybe this summer or in the fall. Regardless if your trip is going to be by ground, air, or rail, whether it's the Platinum Collection that we travel with or the Max Light series that Rudy uses or something from any of their other collections, one of the most important items to help ensure a successful trip is quality luggage.
Travel Pro Luggage is the choice of flight crews and frequent travelers because they stand behind their products with lifetime warranties. They're also offering some great specials right now at TravelPro.com, so make it a point to check them out today or find a link at RMWorldTravel.com under sponsors.
For today's edition of Travel the World from Your Own Kitchen, we've invited Chef Jeffrey Zakarian to join us today, and hopefully together we will bring some happiness to your homes across the country. Many of you probably know him from his shows on TV, like Chopped and Iron Chef America. Maybe you own one of his multiple cookbooks, or perhaps you've eaten at one of his restaurants like we have. To maximize our time with Jeffrey, let's get right to that show hotline.
Jeffrey, welcome. It's nice to connect with you today as you help us travel the world from your own kitchen.
Thank you so much, and thank you for inviting me on.
Well, I really appreciate that. So, you know, I know you've spent your career rising up from some of the top restaurants in the world. The first one that comes to mind, frankly, is the famous Le Cirque in New York City. I've also experienced the Blue Door at the Delano in Miami. I believe the first restaurant you opened yourself about 20 years ago was Town, and that led to Country and a Michelin star. And really, my point in sharing some of the background with our listeners across the country is you understand the restaurant industry from the ground up. So what are some of your thoughts on the reopening and recovery that's ahead for the industry post-pandemic?
You know, I a lot of people are asking me that, and it's kind of like a real giant crapshoot, for lack of a better term. There is so many unknowns. We know what we don't know, that old terminology, but we don't know what we don't know, meaning we don't know who is going to accept coming back and how quick they're going to accept coming back. And that is a problem for restaurants, because most restaurants are in a one-month cash flow basis, which sounds scary, but that's just the way they operate. I mean, it's a very slim margin. And, you know, if you're closed 1 month or even 2 months, that can be the actual thing that really closes you for good. Because, you know, if you don't have any cash coming in, you can't pay anybody. And, we don't have lots of money in the bank. Normally, because most restaurants are mom-and-pop operations, probably sure. 80% of them. So it's tough to you know, thank God things are coming back. I mean, they couldn't get back fast enough. But, I think people are going to, like, in some profound ways, have gotten used to this sort of being bad news, and it's going to take a while before they feel confident again.
Yeah,
it's a longer cycle than everybody thinks.
I 100% agree with you for all of hospitality, and certainly, of course, for the restaurant industry, which we're talking about today. But it will end at some point. We will be socializing in restaurants again. It will take some time. As you just said, restoring consumer confidence. Let's talk a little bit about adapting to the current situation to help that transition. Are there any protocols that are sort of easy for restaurants to implement that may help that in the beginning?
Typically they're opening restaurants in Texas and Florida, and, you know, some of my friends are there, and they send me photos, and, you know, the tables are spaced, and the servers are wearing masks, which I guess is a good thing. But I think, that model predicates what I tell people is, like, you can't have an engine in a car. Like, you know what, we're just going to run half the engine and it'll go.
That's a good point.
It just doesn't work. Yeah. I mean, if you have a rent that's 10 or 12% of your income, of your gross, that's how you figure out if you can open.
Yeah.
So if you have 10 or 12%, you're paying rent. Suddenly you have half the customers. Your rent is 20 to 24%. Now it's unsustainable. So you will decide not to open. Unless you can make sacrifices in labor, which is your largest probably 30 to 40% of your cost is labor. So you have to cut staff in order to open. So then you're back to a lower operating level.
Yeah, there are a lot of variables. Just hearing you talk about that.
It's frustrating. And people say, well, we should ask for rent cuts and landlords should not charge rent. Like, that's just not a fair estimation of the reality of the world. Everyone who is not a landlord wishes they were a landlord, and everyone who isn't a landlord wishes they were a landlord as well.
Well, you know,
landlords means you own something, and if you own something, it means you own it on paper, but really the bank owns it.
That's true.
As a landlord, you need income so you can pay the bank. It's a giant domino. So
but as I hear what you're talking about that, I mean, not only do you have those issues from the business side, but, you know, I've been asking for weeks right now, you know, when you think about if a customer is in a restaurant and they want to return food to the kitchen, if the kitchens are going to have to be kind of surgical, is that going to be an issue? Where if you're trying to touch, you know, what about like salt and pepper shakers on tables? They're high touch items or, you know, patrons. Well, there's so many factors.
Yeah, the problems are mostly in the front. The back, you know, we work with heat, and we work, you know, always work in a hygienic way. The problem is the front. Yeah, so health, you know, salt and pepper shakers will go and all that stuff. But what really is going to be the problem is like the customer, I mean, the owner-operator is going to make a determination whether he's going to open based upon whether it is financially possible to open.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree.
He's not going to open as a feel-good model. Mm. It is not going to happen. And so it's nice to talk about it. But most of the restaurants, I would say a good majority of restaurants, are not going to be able to sacrifice this, survive this in the near term. They just aren't.
Yeah,
and
reality.
So you're going to probably take a 2 to 3 year cycle to really come back into where people have forgotten about it. And you know what I'm saying? Like people are like, that was, remember that? That was awful.
Yeah.
Remember we wore a mask for a year? Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, we'll be talking about it for years.
Head.
Right. And that's going
to
take some time. That's the reality
so
check.
This is a gross, a gigantic disruptor. It is as disrupting as anything has ever happened because it affects every single facet of your life. So if you go, if you can travel, you're still going to have this issue in restaurants anywhere you go in the world, when you can go anywhere in the world. So, I mean, it's a big deal, and I think that, unfortunately, a lot of restaurants aren't going to be able to reopen. And, you know, other people, of course, there will be opportunities, you know, creative destruction. There will be opportunities for people not to open and then maybe sell their business to someone else. And someone else has the means to open because they've
already many chapters, as I keep saying, that are ahead.
A whole restaurant ready to go.
Yeah, that's right.
So it's a very hard, like I started out the conversation, I really don't know what I don't know. And that's basically if the customer is ready to come back in a way that they can.
All right. Well, let's, before we conclude today's conversation, we appreciate your honesty because I think people need honesty right now on many levels. So let's talk about some food.
We just faced death.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank God we're okay. You know, if we're okay, the people haven't lost anyone. We're okay. Now we're going to, like, really be honest and say, okay, we're okay. Now let's figure this out.
Exactly. And let's be real about it.
So let's travel the world from our kitchen.
Since we have you here and we're excited about this, part of why we created this segment is to give our listeners some joy across the country since travel and food are so connected and since most of us are still sheltering in place. Give us a quick and easy recipe that you think all of us can do from our kitchens so we can travel the world from our own kitchen. What do you have for us?
Well, I have a very simple vinaigrette, which is a honey mustard vinaigrette. And the reason why I'm giving you this recipe is it's a variation of one of the basic restaurant recipes that you need to have in your quiver. Mm-hmm. And that is a formative base vinaigrette. And I learned this in France. So when I was working in France, I learned this basically a shallot, very finely diced, salt, pepper, 1/3 to 1/2 volume of any vinegar, and usually it's a white wine vinegar or a tarragon vinegar or something that's just very basic, very simple. And then the rest of that is either 1/3, either 2/3 or 1/2 of olive oil. Now I say that because in this particular recipe, we're going to actually add honey, so we want a bit more vinegar. Most vinaigrettes are 3 to 1.
And Jeffrey, we've got 45 seconds, so go ahead.
So then all you do is you shake it up and then add a tablespoon of mustard and a tablespoon of honey, and you have the best honey mustard vinaigrette you've ever had. And we use it on things like radicchio and endive and escarole and things that are sort of rough winter, spring lettuces that are just coming out of the winter. So, but it's one that's based upon an old-fashioned French vinaigrette.
Well, that sounds so, Thank you.
For Mother's Day, you've just given a lot of people around the country something,
the
so that's terrific. Listen, Chef Jeffrey Zakarian, we really do appreciate the check-in today. Our best to you, to your family, and your team. Have a great weekend, okay?
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. There goes Jeffrey. Honest assessment of what's going on out there. The recipe, if you want it, folks, you can find it on our social media pages, RM World Travel. You can find it on Facebook and our other channels. Right now, though, it is time for us to pause again for a few commercial messages from our sponsors. During the break, we're going to have our engineer, Bobby Patch, and Rudy for our iBlock up next. There's more RM World Travel coming right up. Stick around and don't touch that channel.
Today's edition of RM World Travel is coming right back, and you can also stay connected with the program at rmworldtravel.com.